Welcome to the FI Podcast, the place where we speak about all things accounting. I'm Dave Malthouse.
And I'm Ben Borman. From balancing the books to finding a balance in your life, we've got it all covered. So whether you're here for accounting insights, career advice, or looking after yourself while preparing for your exams, you're in the right place.
We hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do, please leave us a rating and review.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the First Intuition Student Podcast. My name's Ben Borman, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined this evening after a break by my good friend and colleague, David Malthouse. Good evening, Dave.
Hi there, Ben. I haven't been on a show for ages, it feels like now. How's everything been on the Good Ship FI Podcast?
Well, we've had a few weeks off because it's been Easter, but then yes, before then, I had some other guests on. Hopefully, all in safe hands. We've done some great episodes. Listeners, all of those episodes are still available. We say this a lot, but go back and check out the previous episodes. You can search for various topics. There is lots of stuff there. But yes, we are in good shape, Dave, and hopefully back to a new season, a new series of podcast episodes that we're going to be releasing at least one a week for the next few weeks to get us into the summer.
And we should say, Ben, the award-nominated First Intuition Podcast, because I think in the time since I was last on the podcast, we have received a nomination for Podcast of the Year from the PQ Awards. And you and I are heading to the bright lights of London City on Monday to the star-studded award ceremony, which I'm very much looking forward to.
I am super excited. I've never been to the PQ Awards before. We've actually had Graham, the man that organises them, on the podcast. He came along a few years ago before the awards to talk to us about them. Never in my wildest dreams did I think we would actually get a nomination and hopefully maybe even a award at the dinner. So yes, I'm dusting off my suit. I will be in London on Monday night and we will update everybody on our next episode. Whether our nomination has actually turned into an award.
Hope, fingers crossed. Last year's winner was our friends at The Price of Football, who won for Podcast of the Year. That's a podcast that is massive. And knowing Kieran on that podcast, he is regularly asked to be on TV, on radio. He was on Sky Sports the other day presenting, I think, some kind of mini documentary about football finance. So I think winning the award opens all kind of doors. And this time next year, Ben, we could be producing this on live TV.
Wow, wouldn't that be brilliant? It's always a bit of a pinch me moment when Kieran pops up. He's on the radio a lot, and I have to think, he's been on our podcast. He was a guest. He came and spoke to us. He is one of us, essentially. He's an accountancy lecturer, tutor, and has specialised in the world of football and finances. And now every time there is something to do with a player transfer or a football club that is in financial trouble, he gets the call from the BBC to go and be their expert, doesn't he?
He does. And I imagine we must be on speed dial for changes in accountancy qualifications. If the BBC are ever in a bind and need to speak to someone, fingers crossed, we'll be there on the end of the bat phone.
That would be fabulous. But we have got a theme for tonight. So tonight's podcast episode is dedicated to revision. And I'll tell you why I've picked that one for this evening. As I say, we're just back from Easter holidays, and I have seen my 15-year-old daughter spend a number of hours over her Easter holiday. And I'm sure students listening to this can resonate it. She has given up lots of her time to revise because back at school this week, but she has got mock GCSE exams at school next week. And I've been watching her revise. And I've seen some good things, and I've also seen some things that I've spoken to her about and had a bit of a discussion. Dave, I'm sure you've been in the situation. You've got children at home. Have you observed them revising?
I have. I've observed some poor practice, some even worse practice, and some terrible practice, depending on which of my three children I've been looking at carrying out revision. I do find that my own children, and I think this is true of everything that I've ever tried to teach them, I am so less impactful teaching my own children than I am to a classroom full of students. I think I have absolutely no authority whatsoever when it comes to my children, who tend to eye roll, call me granddad, and then continue to do the things that they were doing in a way, which I know are not the most impactful ways of spending your time if you're preparing for exams.
I hear that. I get a lot. Yeah, but you would say that. You're my dad, which students don't tend to say to us when we're teaching them as their tutor, as their classroom tutor or lecturer or point of contact. But I do observe she's put in a heck of a lot of time. And I suppose that's the start point. I think there are two elements to this. There are you doing enough revision? And I would say the vast majority of our students do spend enough time. My concern, and one of my concerns with my daughter has been, is she actually using that time constructively? Or is she almost going through the motions that she's been doing 2 or 3 hours most days in the Easter holidays, but whether she's getting value for that 2 or 3 hours is a bigger factor. Do you concur, Dave?
Agreed. I think that my children and many students that I observe doing revision work could do more impactful work in about half the time that they spend studying. And I know I've sat down and I've watched people where they spent 2 hours, and at the end of 2 hours, they've done half an exam question and they've spent a lot of time flicking through their notes, moaning, whinging, complaining, getting glasses of water, thinking they can't do stuff, throwing their pens around, drawing a picture of a man with a beard, all kinds of stuff that's not actually doing the work. And I'm convinced that if you halved the time and did it a focused amount of work, the end result will be more impactful than the 2 hours where half is messing around and not really being that focused.
So what we're hopefully going to be able to do on this episode is maybe share some revision techniques, some things that we see maybe are potentially more suitable to students than others. I'm loath to say better because I do appreciate people are different. And therefore, just because somebody else revises in a particular way, that might not be the best method and strategy for you as an individual student. But before we get on to that, I wanted to mention a couple of other things. We have previously done podcast episodes on exercise, and I do genuinely think that has got a very big part to play. I have been encouraging her to get out, to take the dog for a walk, to go for a run, to not turn her back on her netball training just because she's revising for an exam, because there is scientific evidence that shows if you exercise, actually, when you come back to study, your brain is going to be more reactive to that study. And so I've put a link for the guys with us live this evening. But if you want to go back and check out, we did a previous episode over the summer, one called The Best Version of You, which looked at exercise. The other thing I was going to mention, and we've done a couple of podcast episodes on this over the years, is sleep. I think particularly the weeks before an exam, the temptation is we start staying up a bit later or even setting our alarms a bit earlier. And yes, we might convince ourselves we're using that time to study, but if that is at the detriment to a regular and a complete sleep cycle, that's actually a bit of an illogical thing to do. Because again, there is lots of evidence that shows if you've had a full night's sleep, the time you then spend studying, learning, revising is going to be far more productive. Your brain is in a much better state to learn, to recall knowledge, if you're having a good, thorough night's sleep. Any thoughts on those two, Dave, before we move on to some study technique?
I'm amazed at the impact that exercise has. And I think this is true of pretty much anything that you find intellectually difficult or mentally challenging. If you've got a problem and you can't work it out, and if it's, you know, something at work where I can't work out the journal adjustment, if you go and get some exercise, come back to it, suddenly that problem becomes easier to solve. So it's almost like, you know, a magic wand that you wave around, say the magic words, and then suddenly you've done some exercise and it becomes easier. I think part of that is the fact that you've taken a break and you've done something completely different. I know there is lots of brain chemistry out there in terms of the endorphins that are released and things like that. Exactly the same with sleep. I think we all know how much better we function if we have a good night's sleep is something that I'm kind of obsessed with on my smartwatch. I have a Garmin and it gives me a sleep score every day when I wake up, and I feel different if I haven't had a good night's sleep. If I've had a good night's sleep, I feel refreshed, revived, more alert, brighter, my concentration's better. It's amazing the power that a good night's sleep has.
And so please go back and check out those previous episodes. You don't have to make radical changes. I think that's the big thing that scares people off. Just getting an extra half an hour or an hour of sleep a day is going to make a noticeable difference. Likewise with exercise, I know that word potentially puts a lot of people off. We are not saying you should be going out and running marathons. We are saying a walk around the block will do. It's just that break away. It's something that gets your body moving, that gets your blood flowing, and hopefully your thoughts flowing with it. So let's go back to a revision session. I think the initial reaction I see is rereading. Something I've seen her do a lot of is open her textbook and just start rereading stuff that she's already covered, because that's an easy thing to do. Rereading your notes, going back over your notes, convinces you you're spending time. What have you done for the last half an hour? Oh, I've reread chapter 4 on X, Y, and Z. But there is lots of scientific evidence that shows that's not really an active study method. It's not really the best way to revise material. So then what we tend to see is, and she has done this, we had to have a trip down to WH Smith's and get lots of different colored highlighter pens. And I'm sure there's a number of you listening to this that have got highlighter pens. We used to give them out with study packs for a while, FI branded ones. And that's a real confidence kind of trick that people are pulling on themselves to say, I'm not just reading it, I'm taking this in more because I am highlighting it. But what I've then observed is a whole A4 page that is just literally covered in highlighter pen. And I'm not convinced that's been the most active study session or revision session. Dave, what are your thoughts initially on the stereotypical, I'm going to revise for half an hour, so I'm going to open my folder and reread a chapter or get my highlighter pen out and pick out some key words that I'm hopefully going to remember?
I think it's a brilliant activity, Ben, if the exam you're going into is an exam about highlighting bits of text with a highlighter. Other than that, I don't think it's particularly impactful. I look at any exam you're going to do or any test you're going to do, and I don't care what it is. If it's your driving test, if it is a technical accountancy exam, if you are learning to be a cook and you need to cook a meal and you're going to be assessed on how well you cook that meal, how many of those do you think it's best to prepare for them by opening a book and highlighting them? It's not. If you want to run a marathon, I've talked about this before, you don't read a book on running a marathon and highlight stuff and then say, oh, brilliant, I'm ready to run a marathon now. The only way you get ready to run a marathon is by practicing running. The only way you get good at football is by kicking a ball. The only way you get good at cooking is by chopping up ingredients, putting them in a pan and cooking them. The only way you get good at accountancy exams is by doing practice questions to prepare yourself for that exam. So reading and highlighting stuff is not a good method of revision. I think it can aid you in the learning process. So if you've never, ever encountered that subject before, to break big chunks of text down into little bits to enable you to say, right, I've read that first sentence and I understand it. Brilliant. Move on. I've read the next sentence. I understand it. It's really good for doing that, but it's not a good tool for revision. Okay, your revision should be focused on trying to achieve the thing that you're going to be assessed on, whether that is your driving test. You know, who's passed the driving test, Ben, by reading a book and highlighting a book on driving? I spent hours and hours and hours in a car actually making mistakes as I drove under the instruction of my driving teacher until I reached a level where I could drive effectively. I never would have done it by reading a book on driving and highlighting it.
The next thing then we go to is rewriting our notes. And I have observed hours of this over the last couple of weeks where we went and bought some flashcards, some little cards from WH Smith's, and we've then spent hours basically just rewriting out chunks of text from our textbook or keywords. Now, I'm going to say that's an improvement on just reading and highlighting because there is a bit more activity there. But what's your view and what do you maybe think are some of the potential problems if our revision session is based just regurgitating, rewriting chunks of our text or listing out key things?
Well, I've had discussions with this with a number of people in various different areas. And I think the act of writing stuff helps you. I think writing over reading helps you to learn, helps you to solidify knowledge. Where you're just copying out words, I do worry, are you taking it in? You can copy words out whilst doing other things, listening to music, watching TV. Are you really focusing all of your attention on it? I think you'll come to it in a minute, but I find it far more impactful if you're trying to write out definitions from memory rather than trying to write out definitions from a textbook. It's a step better. I also think that if you're preparing that as a tool and you're going to use that tool for something else, having flashcards that you can use to get other people to test you, I think that's a really powerful way of using that. So if it's preparation for something else, I can see a benefit from it. But if you are just rewriting a set of notes or condensing the notes or something like that, I don't think it's as impactful as some of the revision techniques we'll cover later on.
I think the reason students like it, it's a bit of a comfort blanket and there is a tangible volume to it. I've seen a stack of cards building up on a desk, which initially thinks, look how productive my study session today has been, because I've been able to kind of list out things on 20 different cards. I would encourage students to think about it slightly differently. What I've now started encouraging her to do is not rewrite her notes, but write on a card some questions based on those notes. And if you can actually, instead of writing out your text again, but write out some questions, the benefit of flashcards are you can put the answer on the back. What you've straight away got is a series of prompt questions that you can then either ask yourself in the future, or as you mentioned, Dave, give to somebody at home, give to one of your mates, give to one of your family members and say, any chance for the next 10 minutes, you could just ask me the questions I've got on these cards. And play a mini game of Trivial Pursuit at home if you want to, but your flashcards will be on things to do with bookkeeping, accounting, business strategy, or whatever subject you are studying for. Something else I think is really useful is being able to write out things in your own words. So Dave, you just hinted at it, but I would think a good thing to be able to do is actually say, I'm going to close my book now, and maybe even go and do some exercise, have a walk around the block. And when I come back, I'm going to start with a blank page and I'm going to write down as much as I can remember. This is now much more active revision. What you're doing is programming your brain to recall information, hopefully at will, which is what you need to do in an exam. What's your kind of take on recall technique, Dave, for information?
I think it's really powerful. It's an exercise I always use when we're revising things like law. So I will ask a classroom of students, I'll give you 10 minutes, and I would like you to write down everything that you know about the law of contract. So what do you know about contract law? So I'm thinking people are then thinking, well, you know, what is a contract? What do I need? I need some kind of agreement. What is agreement? It's offer followed by acceptance. It has to happen in that order. What constitutes an offer? What's a valid form of acceptance? What are the other elements of a contract that I need? And by doing that, they're pulling out all the information they know. And then once we stop that 5-10 minute exercise, we then go through and flesh out the missing elements. So did everyone get the idea about what an offer is? Okay, we need to have an offer. Excellent. What is an offer? What's not an offer? Someone goes, invitation to treat. And go, brilliant, what's an invitation to treat? And we start breaking down as a group all of those different things. Now, the great thing is someone's listed everything that they know. Everything else they add to that piece of paper, and I always tell them to do it in a different color, is knowledge that they didn't remember that they need to try and recall for next time they do a similar exercise. So it highlights, this is what I know, and these are the extra things that I need to really focus on. So I love that as an exercise, asking people to recall, what do they remember about a topic? I always do that before you start doing exam standard questions, because it gives you a base point for, I do know some of these areas. You know, I sometimes say, put together an income tax calculation, just a skeleton one, list the different types of income that you put, where's your personal allowance, what are the rates of tax, put down those things that you do know, and then I'll help you get the things you don't know. Now let's put it into practice.
I talked about flashcards and that the physical cards you can buy to kind of write stuff down, write questions, write yourself quizzes. I found a brilliant app. Other apps are available. This is not a plug. We're not being paid to advertise. It's a free app that I found called Anki Pro. That's A-N-K-I. I've put a link for it in the chat box. There are other similar apps available, but this was a great resource I found because it allows you on your smartphone or on your laptop to make your own digital flashcards, which are two-sided. So you can write some questions and then put the answers on the back. And the app's brilliant because it will give you a chance to review them. So actually, it means you can revise on the go. You haven't got to carry your folder around. You haven't even got to log into your FI Learn. You can get those digital flashcards on your phone from anywhere. But even better than that, it then prompts you to say, can you recall this side of the flashcard before you click over to see the answer? And then it gets you to start rating it. Was your recall knowledge good or was it bad? And what the app then does, the ones that you rank as bad, I couldn't remember enough of that, it starts prompting you more regularly with those subject areas. A real good bit of kind of AI use, really, using an algorithm to make sure that the ones that you were doing badly at feature more heavily in future kind of flashcard quizzes that it gives you. And I was blown away by it. I thought, wow, an even better thing there. If you have produced your own flashcards, you can then share them with other people. I looked on there. There were none specifically for AAT, but there were certainly some flashcards already on there for basic accounting, basic bookkeeping that you had got free access to that you could use as an extra study resource to test yourself. So that's not the be-all and end-all of revision, guys. And I really love Dave's point, a good thing to do before you start looking at questions. But you can be doing this much earlier in your studies, building up those flashcard resources, those tests for yourself, and that recall knowledge will start flowing from that. Mind maps is something else we have talked about on the podcast before, but I'm still surprised when I say it to some students and they say, Ben, I don't really understand what you mean by a mind map. In my view, I think when I was at school and college, we probably used to call it a spider diagram, but what we are doing is actually linking topic areas together. And that's all about building not only links on a page, but more importantly, mental links in your own brain that says, if I said to you asset, you would say to me debit, because we debit to record an asset. You might say current, you might say non-current, you might say something we control that's going to add future economic benefit. And what I've done is played almost word association, that when I see one word, my brain starts sparking all of those connections to everything that's interrelated, because you will see syllabuses for your exams that join things up and things that link around. If you can link those down by doing a mind map. Have you used mind mapping with students before, Dave?
I have. I tend to do it as a group exercise. So I like doing it on a kind of a big kind of blank page, and then have it up on screen and start working from a central idea and then working out to constituent elements. What you can then do quite nicely is, if you do particularly written questions where you're asked about a form of budgeting or different forms of budgeting or advantages of a certain form of budgeting, you can normally get a 5-mark written question and you could say, look, that's this area of the mind map here. It's this element, and look, sparking off each element of that mind map, of that particular node, are all of the answers that you need for this particular question. So it's quite a nice way to illustrate this is the knowledge area that you need to know for this part of the question. And if you can do it for every part of the syllabus, then you can answer any written element of any question because the answers are all there in your mind map.
We're nearing towards the end of the episode, but the big elephant in the room, as far as I'm concerned, is we've not really talked about doing practice questions. And actually, what I have been encouraging at home is to go and find some previous GCSE exams for biology and actually start looking at real exam questions. And that is usually the scariest step for a student to do, because you can make 101 excuse reasons why I don't yet feel ready to start looking at exam standard questions. But Dave, we've heard that so many times over the years, haven't we, from every round of new students. And it's a complete false misnomer. It is never too early to start looking at real exam questions.
Absolutely. I always equate it, as I've said already, I equate it to so many other activities. If you're running a marathon, you're never going to say, oh, it's too early for me to start running. It's like, no, you'd go out running tomorrow, wouldn't you? If you knew you were running a marathon in a couple of months' time, you would start today and you would start running. You'd do that thing. You wouldn't say, oh, I don't really feel ready for running. I'd rather read that book on running again first, or build my flashcard library of how to run. You would get out and you would start running. Exactly the same. And yeah, the first time you go running, are you going to run a marathon? No. If you haven't run for a long time, you might run half a mile before you collapse. And you might feel that's a bit embarrassing. I'm nowhere near marathon ready. But you know you're getting closer to that goal because you tried it today. Tomorrow you go a bit further. In a week's time, you might be able to do a couple of miles and you're getting closer and closer to that target. It's the same with exam questions. I love it if you do an exam question really early on and you do badly, because it tells me you know where you are, you know what you need to improve, and you can really execute that improvement over the next few months. If you do one question towards your exam every single day for 2 months leading up to your exam, I'm guaranteed you will pass that exam. Okay, it just by the action of doing a question, evaluating what went wrong, looking at how do I improve next time, doing another question, another one, another one, another one. And over time, you build your score until you get to that pass mark, whether it's 50%, 55%, 70%, whether you're going for merits, distinctions, whatever you're trying to achieve, you get there slowly by little bits of improvement, doing questions again and again and again.
And that is the definition of revision. You have to do something to then revise next time. What am I going to do different? What am I going to do better? What bits worked? What bits didn't? And it's a case of, I quite often say to students, you don't know what you can't do until you actually try to do it. And it is scary. Yeah. But what we do is very, very practical. You've mentioned a few examples. I know a number of people listening to this are probably at the early stages of their studies, so they're doing maybe a level 2 bookkeeping course. The only way I know how to put the debit side or the credit side of a trial balance together is to actually sit and do one. I could probably read the textbook 100 times over, and it's not until I actually have a list of balances with the numbers and a debit column and a credit column, and I have to start putting the numbers on the debit side or the credit side, that I can really start revising. And, oh, okay, this time when I check the answer, I put the stock asset on the credit side. I'm going to note that down, because next time I'm going to revise the way I do it and remember that an asset is a debit. So inventory asset should be going on the debit side of my trial balance. And I think perfection scares people off, doesn't it? We are not practicing questions to be perfect on them. Just like when I'm training for a marathon, I don't run the world record when I'm training. You've said this a number of times, Dave. We are building up on a journey towards the main event, which is the day you're sitting in the exam room. And so we're going to be developing. I've just Googled search, revising similar to correcting, altering, changing, adapting. I love that one. Reworking. All of those are great mentalities to have when you are doing a revision study session. What am I going to look to improve this time? What mistake did I make last time that I'm not going to do? And if you start in your first question, and let's say you make 20 mistakes, if the next time you do a similar question, you can cut that down to 15 mistakes, chances are that's 5 extra marks you've just got. The next time you target, right, I'm going to now cut it down, I'm only going to get 10 things wrong this time, then 5 things wrong. And before you know it, you are very much ready to get the marks you need to pass the exam, bearing in mind the competency level for our exams is usually 70% or 50%.
Ben, I've just got a quick question. This is something that I've heard students say before, is that I know I've got these practice questions, I'm saving them so I can do them closer to the exam. Okay, as if they're this precious resource that has to be clung onto because it's the magic that's going to help you, and you need to unleash that magic as close to the exam as possible. So if you are a student that says, I've only got 2 mock exams, where can I get more questions? Because in my mind, there are so many places that you can get questions from. But if I'm a student right now and I think, well, I know there's 1 or 2 mock exams that I've got in front of me, where can I get more in questions that I can work through?
So lots of places is the answer to that. The first thing I would say is don't ever feel bad for redoing a mock again. I think sometimes people look at them as a one-go attempt. And actually, there is great value in redoing the mock. And a lot of students will fob me off and say, yeah, but Ben, I've already done those questions, so why would I do them again? Well, that's your chance to learn, to improve, and to show this time I'm going to get the bits that I got wrong last time right. So my first step is don't presume just because you've done mock one once, you can't do it again and still use that as an effective revision session. The second thing is, as you say, in a standard FI set of study notes, you've probably got access to anywhere between 2 to 4 mock exams. You'll also have other practice tasks. There are plenty of questions to go at. So I very rarely see a student run out of questions. You've got access to the exam body's own websites. So if you go onto the AAT website, there are sample assessments. If you're doing CEMA or ICAW or ACCA, on their own websites, there are additional practice questions and additional past papers for some of them that you can have a go at. Lots and lots. And I'm sure if you contacted your tutor, they would normally have something else they could provide you or give you another idea of reframing something that you've already done. Have you got any other thoughts on where students can go for questions?
I think you're absolutely right with all of those. There are always old syllabus things you can do in all the qualifications we teach. You can go back 10 years and look at exam questions. Sometimes you've got to know where to find them, whether it's on the Institute's websites, whether it's in archived versions of websites, whether it is through your tutors. But there's a whole, you know, it's generations of questions, particularly in the things I do, management accounting, which, you know, realistically, a lot of those theories haven't changed for generations. And you've got 30 odd years worth of exams for some qualifications that you could call upon if you know where to get them. Now, some of them are very hard to get hold of, but you should be able to get at least the last 2 syllabuses for most exams that we teach and we deliver for. Another really good way of getting practice questions, and this is not, I don't think this is exam standard yet, okay, but what you can do is you can use artificial intelligence. So you could use ChatGPT, you could use, is it Google Gemini, I believe. And you can say, this is the subject that I'm studying. I would like some revision questions. Now, if you're doing, say, an exam that's got multiple choice questions, you could say, I would like 20 multiple choice questions, some involving numbers, some involving narrative. Can you give me those questions and then mark them after I give you the answers? And you can do that, and it will give you 20 questions, and it will give you choices A, B, C, D, and you will type in A, B, C, D for each of the questions, and it will come back and tell you which questions you got right, which questions you got wrong. It's a really smart way of using technology to help test you. Now, it's not going to be in the same style as your exam, because they'll be written by different people, different processes, but it's a really good way of getting someone independent to test you, maybe if you don't have someone else around. It's a really nice way of putting yourself under a little bit of exam pressure, okay, before you start doing other questions.
We are up against the clock. Can I just make one more observation point that I see students letting themselves down with? If you are going to do a revision session and do some practice questions, my view would be you should then allow at least the same amount of time to review and to look back over your answer, the model answer, the right answer, and use that as a springboard towards your next study session. So if you've sat down and done a trial balance that's taken you 15 minutes to put the debits and the credits in, I would suggest you need to also allow at least 15 minutes to now go back, mark your own work, and start looking at what you got right, but also, and probably more importantly, what you got wrong, why you got it wrong, and what you're going to hopefully do to get that bit right next time. And sometimes I've seen students that spend lots of time doing questions, but don't spend enough time actually reflecting on what they've just done, having a proper look at the model answer, the solution, and figuring out how they would improve their answer if they got that question again.
That's the bit that for me is really important. You do the question, you mark the question. Most people do those two parts, and then it's, how would I do it better next time? And I always try and stop people from saying, how would I get it perfectly right next time? How would I get one or two or three extra marks next time? What is that, you know, one or two extra things that I could do to improve this question and take me from, you know, 8 out of 20 to 11 out of 20, you know, just to give you that little bit extra. Do that enough times and you soon get out to 100%.
That's it. It's all about those small marginal gains, isn't it? Adding those extra couple of marks every single time before you know it. Once you've done 5, 6 practice questions, you've probably added 10 or 12 marks to your score, which can make a big difference at getting you over the pass criteria. And we are up against time. I've really enjoyed having a chat. It's great to be back on the podcast. Dave, I will see you at the award ceremony on Monday night, and we will report back on the next episode with how we have got on. Would you like to do the wrap up for this evening?
Yeah, I'm just going to tell a little story, Ben, about a conversation I had with someone who is a singer, and they sing professionally. So they sing with a band. They also will sing covers and things like that. And I asked her, how do you remember the lyrics to songs? How, if you're asked to sing a new song, how do you learn the lyrics to a song? And I said, because I'm awful, because I will get, if I'm trying to sing along with a song, I will sing I instead of he, she instead of me, get the words jumbled, I'll mishear things, I will start singing the wrong verse in the wrong place, I'll be all over the place. And she said that, first of all, there's three types of song. There are songs that are repetitive, the same things happen again and again and again. She says they're really easy. There are songs that are stories. And if you understand the story, it's really easy to learn a story song. And then she said there are songs that just seem to be lists of random things, and they're really hard. And that's the same with us in accountancy sometimes. Sometimes there's a lovely story about how you do something, a lovely process, and that's easy. Sometimes it's repetition of doing the same calculation again and again and again. And sometimes, and this was me in audit, it seems to be a random list of stuff that's really, really hard. So some things are hard, some things are really easy. And that's just the nature of who we are and the different things that we're studying. And then she says that she will then, if she's got a new song, she'll read the lyrics to make sure that she understands the words. She does that before she maybe listens to a demo of the song or listens to someone else that's actually recorded that song. Because she says, if you just listen to someone, sometimes you mishear lyrics. And I'm sure we've all got stories of words that we've misheard and think that a story means something else to the thing that actually means. And I still challenge you, Ben, to tell me what they're singing in the REM song, The Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight, because I've got no idea what those lyrics actually are. And then sing with the lyric sheet in front of you. Okay, so you're actually singing with the lyric sheet to make sure you get it right. Do that again and again and again until you lose the lyric sheets. And it's just the, for me, it was, okay, so the way that you learn is by doing the thing. It's not, you know, there's some prep work to make sure that you understand what the words say, But it's do that thing again and again and again until you're good enough at doing that thing without the support there. So practice your questions, use the support of the model solutions, do that again and again and again until you go into the exam and you no longer need the support of those model solutions. So completely different environment, completely different thing that you're preparing for, but the technique's the same. You've got to do some prep work to make sure you understand. And then it's practice, 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 doing the thing that you're going to be tested on until you don't need any help or support alongside. So that's where we're going to leave things today, Ben. It's been a pleasure to be back. It's been a pleasure to be here with the audience that are watching us live. There's a fantastic audience that have had loads and loads of questions, loads and loads of input. I'm looking forward to the awards as well. I will see you face to face in London next Monday, and hopefully next week we'll be reporting back on hopefully a fantastic evening, and fingers crossed we might be bringing home a prize. We'll be right back.